Hi.
This is Take Charge Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist.
Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information. We give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health. I'm Corrine Fornari with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And we're here. You know, so often, Carol, we look at the landscape of health practitioners, and there are some brilliant practitioners out there putting themselves out into the public for the notoriety of the work that they're doing, etc. Many times, they deserve it. But there is another group of doctors. These doctors are hardworking. They're caring. They're looking at their patients and attempting to figure out the problem. And they're not looking for notoriety. They got their heads down. They're looking at their patients, not just labs, which is quite unique, isn't it? And so today we have gone into our own community and we've sought out one of those doctors that both Carol and I have known for years, hardworking, focused, since 1974, working with patients, working with allergies, working with pediatrics, working with immunology. Many of you might know him. His name is Dr. Morton Teach. Carol, would you like to welcome him to the show and introduce him to the audience, please?
Yes. As you mentioned, I've known Dr. Teach for a long time, and I first made his acquaintance over the telephone working for pharmacy, and Dr. Teach would call us up with his patient in the office. So we'd actually have like a three-way discussion on how to use hormones for this patient. I thought it's one of the most effective techniques, and I really appreciated his reaching out for us to be able to help his patients. So I finally met him in person. He's delightful, and he is one of those people who never stops learning. Now, one of his particular specialties is candida, and I'd like to talk about that for a while because I found with hormone replenishment techniques, candida can throw a big monkey wrench into the whole work. And a lot of people have this issue. So welcome to our show, Dr. Teach. We're so delighted to have you. And let's start there. Let me just ask one question. How prevalent do you think issues with candida are?
Hello, how are you? I started tying my world in with candida in 1982 when I heard the first lecture by Dr. Truss. He was in immunology, and I sat next to Dr. William Crook. So
yep.
I started
with
the early people right away, and I ended up in Dr. Crook's book. We'll go back to this. At the beginning, this was crazy world to do anything with this. Dr. Truss sent me a patient, and he told me this woman was a Hasidic woman from Brooklyn, and she was going to be put in a mental hospital for chronic depression because they tried every medication on her, every antidepressant, and nothing worked. So she would take a gypsy cab up from Brooklyn and pay $50 up and back, and I put her on Nystatin the way he recommended. We talked every other week, and after a month, she'd see me 2 months, 3 months. finally, by the fourth month, he said, I don't think it's going to work. And I told her, I can't help you. Her comment was, please, but there's no one else. They're going to put me in the mental institution. I said, I wish I could help you, but take the medication. I give her a Nystatin, and I'll talk about that. And she took it, and I said, don't come back. A month later, she shows up at the office again, still depressed. And at that point, I got very strong with her. I said, please don't come back. I don't want to take your money. And so she went home. 6 months, she comes in again. And at that point, I was ready to really scream at her. But she says, I'm feeling better.
Wow. Well,
I kept her on the Nystatin for 5 more months. She was perfectly fine. She came out of the whole depression. And we followed her for 4 more months. And at that point, she felt fine, so I discharged her. About 5 years later, I walk into the waiting room, and there are 5 Hasidic men standing there, standing up, and this lady. And I said, I know her, I know her. So I brought her in. I realized who she was. And they sat in my room. They stood up, and she sat down. And I turned to her, and I said, how are you? She didn't answer me. So
really?
One of her sons, who was one of the men, stands up. He said, oh, she's doing beautifully. We just came back to thank you for giving our mother back.
Wow.
That's how I started. And then I gave a lecture at the first yeast meeting. I gave, I talked at the meeting about my patients a little bit. I don't give a lot of lectures, but I talked, and I'm on tape for that. So we started there, and slowly, we've gotten more and more, and I guess I've gotten to be known to use this because I find it works on a lot of things. I can use this. First of all, I was quoted in Dr. Crook's book. If I'm going on, tell me. But I was quoted in his book as saying, I will not diagnose yeast without a sugar craving. And that's that. At that time, no one was talking about sugar cravings.
Right.
Certainly now, it's across the board.
Before we go much further, Dr. Teach, could you explain to our audience what Nystatin is? You brought it up, how important it was to this woman's recovery, and not everybody will understand what it is.
Okay. Nystatin. Basically, people get very upset about Nystatin. If you look at the name, it is not a statin drug. It's New York State Institution. That's where it comes from. There were 2 women working for the New York State Health Department 50 years ago, and they decided to do a study on Candida. And they had a grant from Squibb, so they put different things in with the Candida, and nothing worked. Until they took a mold in the environment called Streptomyces nursii, which is a non-toxic, non-allergic mold, put it in with the Candida, and the Candida, the capsule, broke up completely. The nice part of Nystatin is it is probably the safest medication now because they made it into a medication, but it really would be an over-the-counter medication. Alternative type of thing. And it is probably the safest drug I know. The only side effect is occasionally 1 in 100 get upset stomach and so on. But that lasts for a short period of time.
That's a wonderful bit of history. I didn't even know that.
I use Nystatin differently than other people. They usually use a short period of time. They do it orally. It comes in tablet form, which has dyes and chemicals and everything. So it has to be made up, if you're going to do it right, in a compounding pharmacy. Oh, I have my patients use it vaginally, rectally, everything. Basically, the vaginal is usually the women, but not the men. But we do it in every orifice we can because the intestinal tract goes from the nose to the throat throughout the whole thing and down through the rectum. And the point is, if you really do it just orally, it doesn't seem to get be as effective as it would otherwise.
Very interesting. What are some of the symptoms that alert you to the fact that your patient may have an overgrowth of yeast? what are hallmark symptoms?
Very often they're intestinal problems, but it can go across the board. A lot of autoimmune diseases are being treated by me for this, and I've had amazing results. A lot of them clear up. Diabetes, I've had patients who have been on insulin, and when we treat with an iodine, we've been able to get them off the insulin, period.
Years ago, actually around the time we met, everybody was talking about candida, candida. Anybody that walked in the office, it was all about candida, candida. Everything, any itch, anything was candida, candida. And then it all relatively calmed down. It hasn't been heard of a lot lately in terms of patients walking in the door, I have candida, I have candida. So what do you think? Do you feel like there was a remission and it came back? You know, all these big floods that we've had, weather changes. Do you think that that's affecting candida, or that people are more susceptible to it?
Let me put it this way. I hear the alternatives, the naturopaths and so on. They're all on summits on talking about candida, candida, candida. Originally,
really?
This was considered way out in left field. A lot of the physicians do not believe in this.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, I've probably treated 5,000 people for candida, in quotes. And I keep trying to run away from it, but the patients come in, and I've been quoted in books and so on. So they come to me, and they have diagnosed it themselves in many cases. One of the things that I found is, I don't know if anyone else, one of my old dermatology books showed a nail, fingernail. Actually, I looked at the big toenail, and they have horizontal waves on them.
Mm-hmm.
Almost every patient I've seen has horizontal waves on their toenail. Adults,
mm-hmm.
Not children, but adults. And as we treat them, it clears up and they get normal nails. So that's one of the things. But they have sugar cravings almost across the board, or carbohydrate cravings.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put them on a strict diet at the beginning, and they go through probably a week or 2 weeks of withdrawals. They get hurt reactions. One of the first things I do is take them off coffee.
Oh, really?
First of all, yes. That's I go through a week of coffee, because a lot of them get withdrawals, and coffee has mold in it almost across the board, even organic coffee. And the regular coffee is often sprayed with chemicals from South America. So can I tell you a quick story?
Please, yes. We love stories.
My old accountant, David, used to drink 4 or 5 cups, and he smoked cigarettes. He was an accountant and an attorney, both. I kept saying, David, get off your coffee, off your coffee. No. Finally, he said, I'll tell you what, you test me for coffee. I do skin testing. I do something called provocative neutralization. But what I did was I said, okay, we'll do it. We don't normally make coffee, but we made a mixture of coffee, and I made it so that I could put it under his skin. And we put it under his skin at the dose that we normally do, and nothing happened. He said, see, I'm not reacting. I said, let me try something. So I underdosed him. This is all related to dosage. I underdosed him by 100. What happened is, within 5 minutes, he was a bumbling idiot. He could barely talk. It was like he was drunk. I called everybody in the office to see, to make sure I wasn't making it up.
Uh-huh.
And we waited and watched him for about 5 minutes, and he was going through all this. And finally, I took one drop, put it under his tongue, and within 2 minutes, he came out of it. At that point, his comment was, I can't believe what I just saw. I thought you were crazy, but this really works. I said, go home, get off your coffee, call me if you have any problems. And there's something called Trisol. It's basically an alkaline calcium, potassium. It's a mixture that I use because it'll neutralize the acidity that you get from withdrawals. And so what happened, I said, call me if there's a problem, and whatever. He didn't call me for 3 weeks. Mm. He finally called me and he said, "Did you get off the car?" He said, "I was in bed for 6 days with the worst headache I've ever had."
Wow.
"And I was totally tired. Did you get the Trizol?" "No, I never got it." "How do you feel now?" He said, "I haven't felt like this in years. It's the best I've ever felt."
That's interesting.
So that was that, and he was happy. His partner, who was also an attorney and accountant, called me about 5-6 weeks after that. He said, "Not only is David not irritable and edgy, but his ability to think is quadrupled." I get a lot of other patients this way. It's not everybody reacts to it, but it's the first thing I do. And then I put him on a fairly strict yeast-free, sugar-free diet, which they will go through, and then I start him on nystatin for usually. Most of these people, after a while, can start breaking the diet. I let them go back, and many of them go back to normal diets. They can even have sugar without having any problem because it's the yeast that reacts to the sugar. And the point is, if I get the yeast under control, there's no one to eat the sugar, and therefore they do well. Yeast lives on sugar.
Now, you know what I find with my patients? I find that people, if they walk in the door, and they're willing to get off sugar. They're willing to get off bread. But they're not willing to get off coffee. That's the hardest thing of all, is to get them off of coffee.
I totally agree with you. That's the first thing. But they come in, and I tell them, try it for 2 weeks. See what happens. If you feel the same, there's no withdrawals or anything, I'm very happy to, you know, give you the coffee back. You can go back. Many, many of them get withdrawals, and they don't. They can see the difference. It's very strange, but people get headaches. The Jewish people, they have their one day of fasting, and half of them are getting headaches when they're on their fast, and that's diagnostic of the whole thing, but
They even look for suppositories with caffeine in it.
Yep.
I disagree. Not the caffeine.
They can have caffeine. They can even take caffeine, and they don't get reactions.
That's more likely.
Yeah. I'll give you another story. Ready?
I'm ready. I love stories.
Who's been with me for many, many years, and she's been on nystatin almost constantly all the time. Every time we've tried to take her off, she titrates it. But every time we try to take her off, she doesn't feel as well. Finally, after 14 years, her husband agreed to have the house evaluated for mold. It was moldy as heck in the basement. They had it renovated. They had it all cleared up. And she doesn't need nystatin anymore. I have a lot of other patients similar to that. Somewhere or other, there's a correlation, and I use the nystatin very often. It helps their mold sensitivity to the environment. There's other ways of doing it. I use other things, but that's one of the things I've seen almost across the board.
Now, nystatin, correct me if I'm wrong, the reason why you're able to use it so liberally is that it's not really absorbed. It moves through the intestine and changes the microbiome, but you're not absorbing it into your system. So you can use it liberally. So it works within the balance of the body's own natural mechanism to allow it to rebalance itself through the intestines, through the microbiome, through the vaginal orifice, through the nasal orifice. And at least that's the way I understand it.
That you have taken the words. This is what I explain to my patients before I give it to them. I tell them that this is the approach. I mean, basically, they have yeast in their bowel, and the yeast itself will grow because they've taken antibiotics, been on steroids, they've been on chemo. All these things can cause the yeast to overgrow. A lot of them have been on tons of antibiotics. And what happens is their immune system goes down, and therefore they don't do very well. What we do is, again, as you said, I'm the microbiome has been, the probiotics or the microbiome has been there, but the normal flora is decreased, and therefore the yeast grows into that empty space. What we're doing is killing off the yeast so that the normal flora and microbiome can regrow again, and then you rebalance the body, and once it's balanced, they can go back and live a normal life very often.
Wow. Last night I was in a talk Carol put together on probiotics and the new science. It's totally new science and understanding of how the body's adjusted and how this niacinamide 30 years ago was addressing this problem indirectly without the depth of the science that we have behind us right now. It was creating a balance intestinally, which is pretty interesting to look at it in retrospect. There's a lot of wisdom in retrospect.
That's really interesting. I think we're almost where you may be touching this subject you brought up with me earlier this week when we were talking. And you were talking about molecular mimicry and how that's affected by yeast. Can you explain that?
One of the things that we see with molecular mimicry is that the yeast will mimic thyroid, it will mimic corn, it will mimic wheat. And I'm treating autoimmune diseases very frequently, and a lot of them get better. I wish everybody did, but I've had patients. I had a patient with Crohn's disease. He had had probably two-thirds of his bowel taken out because he had inflammation. And he was to the point where they were going to do a third one because his doctor had done his examination. He said, it's just terrible. And I asked him if I could have 2 months and see what happens, you know, using the Nystatin. And this was a new patient. I put him on the Nystatin. And at the end of 2 months, he did another exam. He said he can't believe it. He totally cleared up.
Wow.
He needs surgery. I've had many other patients with the Crohn's or colitis or whatever. It sounds like it's across the board, but it's amazing. I'm amazed by what happened. We actually had students come in and evaluate my records. We went through about 50 or 60 records, and we're running 80% results positive on these records. After a while, it's like, I don't want to see anyone more for candida because it's, you know, everybody comes in, and the point is it really works, and these people get better. And I wish it was 100%, but it's not. There's something missing. But at the numbers were high. The student came in and went through, and we found there were about 20 different symptoms that correlate with this that go with all the patients. And the women are PMS, the men have acne, a lot of the yeast itself causes the problems. It can mimic neurotransmitters in the brain that will actually cause depression and everything, anxiety. I'm treating a lot of autistic children and ADD, and it mimics the neurotransmitters that go to their brain. It either turns it on or blocks it. Again, I'm generalizing, but these work.
I have a question.
I'll say one more thing.
Yes.
I'm going to interrupt 1 second. An important thing for all this, as much as we talk for yeast, is to take a good history, to learn what to ask patients. I ask a lot of patients things that I've asked them, has anyone asked you? No, never. And I have a lot of women that PMS, they crave sugar. They get a vaginal discharge, a normal vaginal discharge in their underwear, but it's not yeast. It's an allergic reaction to the yeast in the bowel, causing an allergy coming out of the vaginal area. When I treat the bowel, the vaginal discharge disappears.
And you treat the bowel with a niacinamide suppository?
Yeah, we treat it with, I treat it with oral, I treat it with, we do the whole GI tract.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, the vaginal discharge is really an allergic reaction. I'm on a paper with the head of one of the major hospitals in the city on histamine and candida causing the whole vaginal discharge problem.
Right, because people go in and there's no evidence of any infection in the discharge, and their doctors just send them back home and say, nothing's wrong with you.
They say it's a normal discharge. The patients come in and they've been to their doctors and they've been told it's a normal discharge. But it clears up when I treat the yeast. So, I mean, everything is... I've gotten the reputation.
Now, let me ask you, though. Are you able to culture this? Or it's only...
No. That's... I did a whole long study on this, and we found that it doesn't show up in the bowel on culture many, many times. Occasionally, they'll have it in the bowel, but it's not the way I evaluate it, because it really doesn't show up for some reason. And it may be the upper part of it, but the point is, my feeling is, and this is not medical, but the point is, if you don't treat the anal area and so on, very often it regrows from the lower part up, and therefore they get recurrence. If you do the whole GI tract, they get better because you take away some of the total load and the body can rebalance itself at that point.
How long do you assume, and I know this is an unfair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, how long can you assume that you would start to see results?
Okay, I'll give you the answer.
Okie
dokie. The answer is what may be the title of my book, Everybody is Different. I've seen people in 2 days get better. I've seen other people where I was ready to give up. The longest I've gone was this one lady. Everybody's different in the sense that I had one lady come in and we smelled mold on her clothes and everything else, and we finally got her house cleared up a little bit. But I gave her Nystatin. I gave her one vaginal Nystatin. She got a Herxheimer reaction, which is a die-off of the yeast. And they can get all sorts of symptoms from that because we're breaking the yeast down too fast. So what I did, I told her to take a tweezerful and put it under her tongue. She still got a bad reaction. We took a tweezerful, put it in a glass of water. She still got another reaction.
Oh, my goodness.
While the reaction was still there. We took a tweezerful of that, a little dropperful, put it in another glass of water, and she could tolerate it. If she took more than about 8 sips, she got worse. So we kept her on this for a while.
Almost like a homeopathic dose.
I think this could be, it's psychological. So I had the pharmacist make up fakes and the real thing. And we told her about it, and she started taking it. At the end of 4 weeks, we went back, and she told me which one. She was right on the nose. She knew which one was the nice, was the candida, the Nystatin, and which one wasn't. And we kept her on this drop, this little sip, for 5 months. I never would do this. But she was getting better and better and better. At the end of 5 months, out of nowhere, she started taking a capsule. She was up to 8 capsules, 8 million units, within about 4 weeks. She totally cleared up. But that's the extreme.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your neutralization work? And you've been very active with the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, and this is one of the techniques they teach there. Could you elaborate on that? You mentioned it a little bit.
I did residencies in pediatrics, allergy, immunology, and I met this group called Clinical Ecology at the time. And we changed the name to the American Academy of Environmental Medicine. What happened is they...
She wanted to understand some of the techniques.
Oh, okay. For neutralization.
Neutralization, yeah, okay. Yeah. What we very often will do is I can put something on the skin I can put a dose of something on the skin. We can use a food, a chemical, and we will. It's very. It depends on the titration of it. In other words, if I put a regular skin on the skin, like a regular allergist, they either get a positive or a negative, and they'll say it's too strong, it's too weak. We can titrate it to the point where I can give either a sublingual drop or a injection, and we can turn it off. It's almost like the idea that there is a dose that stops it. What's interesting is that I have many patients that are taking drops under their tongue and they've cleared up completely. I can actually even take people where they'll come in with flu, with fever, and so on. If we give them the right dose, they clear up in the office.
Wow.
I've had them take hormones where we have them crying and they're turning on and off, and as we hit the right dose, they're cleared up completely. It's a very special technique. What's interesting is, I'll go back to the Nystatin very quickly, what I remember is I have had only one patient that I know of that has gotten COVID that has been on Nystatin for a period of time, and we're talking about many, many, many patients. And for some reason, I think it's protective of the COVID to a certain extent. I don't know why, but it does help.
Perhaps because you've got the body unburdened with the toxic effects of candida, so the immune system's much better.
Exactly.
Maybe.
That's exactly what it is.
Uh-huh.
So tell us about your pediatric patients, your autistic kids, or
yes.
Anywhere on the spectrum. What are you seeing there? And
can
I
come back to that in a few moments?
Sure, where do you want to go?
Okay. We started talking about the molecular mimicry.
Yeah.
What's interesting is I have a lot of patients that have been to thyroid endocrinologists, thyroid doctors. They have them on T4, which
mm-hmm.
is Synthroid,
yes.
or something like
we
that.
All of us
and
see that.
What they do,
everybody.
And what they do is, I draw a picture for my patients, but it's called the HP hypothalamus pituitary axis.
Adrenal.
And what happens is it affects the T4. Now, but T4 converts into T3, which is 4 iodines as opposed to 3 iodines. The 3 iodines
mm-hmm.
is about 4 or 5 times as powerful as the T4. And what happens is there are receptors for the T4 where they can convert, take away one iodine, and they convert into T3, which is much more potent. The T4, if it's blocked, if the yeast comes in and settles into that T4 because it's molecular mimicry, it looks just like the T4. It blocks the conversion of T3 into T3, and therefore a lot of these patients don't do well. And now I've found that if they have take away their corn, take away their wheat, and they also can cause the blockage of the T4 receptor. Once we get the T3 balanced again, and they feel better, they feel fine.
Oh, yes.
But a lot of doctors, the conventional doctors, almost across the board, don't even test for T3. Or reverse T3 is another thing that can block the conversion. I can't get into all the details on this, but that's one of the things that's called molecular mimicry. It's the yeast is mimic the thyroid, and it will mimic the other. So a lot of things clear because it's not blocking the conversion.
As far as interfering with the action at the receptor sites for all these things.
Right, exactly. It's like a landing field. And then
uh-huh.
the landing field is blocked. It can't convert into something else. Should I go to my
autistic? Yes.
Well, I want to start that one out because autism and autistic children just won't take anything. You give them a capsule, they're not going to take it. You give them a liquid with nothing in it, they're not going to take it. They're so overly sensitive to taste, to texture, to color, that they block anything that might help them from coming into their system. So how do you...
You can always put it in applesauce, or you can do something. Some way or other, you can get it in there.
Okay.
We do most of the time. What's interesting is I trained originally in my allergy residency with a Dr. Ben Feingold.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
there
yes.
A lot of people know that I was his resident for 2 years, his only resident.
Really?
And I was going to write a paper on ADD caused by artificial coloring and flavoring. And they said, I can't do that because they needed me to do another study, which I never ever did. But that summer, he actually wrote a book on artificial coloring and flavoring and causing ADD. I was going to help him, but I decided not to, and I ended up going to Europe and living in a van for a year at age
35. Sounds fun.
But he became famous. Anyway, we find that's one thing does it, but there are a lot of different things can cause the cause. The trick is to get to the causative agent. It's rebalancing the body. We look at mitochondria, we look at other things, and if you look close enough, there's usually an imbalance. And it's, again, asking the right questions. And we were getting very good results at one point. Right now, I'm not seeing very many patients because of the COVID. So we're doing it on internet, and I don't get to see the children the same way. But the results have been very, very good. Some of the children have been really turned around completely. The normal children. I have a whole batch of children. The vaccines are controversial, but I've had probably 25 children where they were normal children, and they got the MMR vaccine, and within 2 weeks they were walking around totally autistic, non-responsive, and so on. And I think there's a group of children that do react to the vaccines. Not everyone... Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean everybody, but there are a group that do, and we can rebalance the system. It throws the enzymes off and everything else, and it's rebalancing these things.
Wow.
Diet so when you're, is the first thing I look at. Diet is the first thing I look at.
And you'd probably be taking away wheat and corn and...
Right.
Dairy.
But often they can go back and eat them again once we've gotten them straightened up again.
Do you ever use probiotics, or do you just rely only? Okay, you also use probiotics.
Oh, I use probiotics. The first time when they come in, I put them on Nystat and I give them probiotics right away. It's because you're replenishing the probiotics that were killed off by the antibiotics and all this. And so you rebalance. This is all about balance, rebalancing the system.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I'll give you an example, one of mine, in that years ago I had a patient who had been very, very ill, much, much better. But every time she went to her beach house, she'd become violently ill to the point where they had this beautiful house on the water or right... And she couldn't go there any longer. And, is this emotional? What is going on? How can this happen? I have a healthy wife. I bring her out. And then she becomes violently ill. I said, beach houses, they're famous for their musty, moldy kind of smell. I said, get an ozone machine. And 2 weeks before you go out there, turn it on in the basement for a week. And just let it run, and then have the husband go out and turn it on in the living room, close it off, and room by room for about 2 weeks. And she went out there and had no more problems. She felt fabulous. That was a powerful learning for me in that the power of yeast and how people react to it.
Many years ago, I actually owned a house on a lake.
Mm-hmm.
The house had a dirt basement. It was a stone house with a dirt basement and everything. We actually got a rug and put it on the floor of the huge living room. It had beam ceilings. It was beautiful on the lake. And what happened is within 2 months, the mold had come through the rug, and we had to throw it out. It was almost a new rug because the mold was there. And I think there's a relationship with that one of people in my family actually had cancer, and I believe there's some correlation with the mold and the cancer and everything else.
Wow.
The exposure there. And the children getting sick and so on. I didn't know at that time that this was as important. And I have this almost constantly. I look for the mold, and a lot of the patients, I have patients coming in where they can't even live in their apartment anymore, and they have to move out. And we've rebalanced their system, and I think it really makes a big difference.
Do you work with the household at all also, or tell them to?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, this is a total family world type of response to everything. In other words, some people have to change their environment. A few people have to move out of their houses. And it varies. I got an IRB, which is a research grant out of Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. I'm on the staff there. And I had two medical students come in. And they started working. We were making bacterial vaccines where we would culture their nose and we would put them on allergy shots for the vaccine itself. They came in, there were 60 patients. We did a retrospective. There were 60 patients with chronic sinus infections, and they had been on at least 4 or 5 courses of antibiotics the year before. We put them on the vaccine. These were my failures to Nystatin and whatever. We kept them on that, and they were on the vaccine for 2 years. During the second year, we evaluated how many antibiotics they needed. And the first year, they needed 4 or 5 courses of antibiotics for the whole, per person for the whole group. At the end of third year, they needed 4 or 5 antibiotics for the whole group per se. In other words, all together they needed 4 or 5 courses of antibiotics for everybody together rather than per person. And we were going to publish it, but we didn't. And it should be published.
Yeah, it should be published. Well, people need to know these things.
People are so...
Can I give you one more example?
I would love it.
My medical I'll go back to my medical student who was at Sinai. She was in her 30s. I can't mention names. She was in her 30s. And she was very bright, but she was failing. And another student was one of my patients. She said, you have to see her and treat her. And I talked to the dean, and she said, I'll give you 2 months. And after that, she can't. She just is not making it. So I went through his testing her for this and that, and asking history, finally I figured it out. She was living above a garage, or not a garage, a store, where they were spraying pesticides. We moved her out of her apartment. This woman became the chief resident in neurology at Yale. She's one of the brightest people I've ever met. And only because of the fact that we got her away from the chemicals, was she able to survive as a doctor.
How frightening is that with all the chemicals they're using to prepare the schools for these young children to return?
Yeah, this is quite scary to me.
If they use the right things, they might get away with it, but otherwise it's scary because they can turn them around. I have children that can't go to certain schools, for sure.
Well,
we look at it, yeah.
We just got in our home, because I had been sick, we got a UVB light. And we turn it on. We also have an ozone machine. We turn it on in a room and just disinfect the room. And then the next night, the next room. And that might be a really... As a matter of fact, NYU, when you walk into all of the NYU buildings, they have the walk-in, and then like almost like a little atrium where you walk in, the door swings, and then you go to another door.
Right.
In that area there, they have UVB lights shining down. And that was something that they instituted since COVID. So everybody walking in the area, or into the hospital, or even the offices, is being disinfected.
I actually got a generator. Ozone generator. I have a huge machine. I actually put it in my basement of my house, except I actually got almost sick from it because I didn't realize I stayed in there for about 20 minutes after I turned it on.
Oh,
I could feel in my chest for the maybe a month that was tight.
Almost a little burny.
I didn't realize.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you have to be careful. But the point is, I have this huge generator that will work. I give it to patients occasionally, and it will really clean the house up. It's not a little one, you know, a foot by a foot. This is about six, maybe 2 feet by 2 feet or 3 feet by 3 feet.
Oh, my goodness. This is serious. This is like what they use in a butcher shop.
They use it for fires. After a fire, they have mold, you know, from all the water coming in everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're using this. Some of the fire departments are using this type of thing.
Oh, interesting.
Well, that is a good idea. Didn't somebody write a book called Sick Homes, Sick People?
Yeah. I have most of those books. I was very lucky. I'm changing subjects, I hope you know. Probably ADD too. But I inherited part of my practice, a small part of my practice, from a man who was the first head of allergy at Mount Sinai Hospital, Joseph Harkavy. He was brilliant. He actually wrote the only book on vascular allergy causing systemic manifestations. We can actually take foods and cause arrhythmias in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
One. And he's the only one. I have four books by him, but Dr. Bill William Ray, who was a good friend of mine, Bill knew about him, and he said he's one of the few people that really, you know, has written anything about this. And I have the books, and they talk about all these different things, histamine causing arrhythmias and so on, and I can reproduce them in my office.
Go. Well, I'll tell you a personal experience, and maybe you can evaluate it. Is that I was working at a doctor's office who also did this desensitization. And I also was, I hate to admit this, known for my mood swings. So one day I'm there on a Saturday, and three patients in a row canceled. So there I am with nothing to do for 3 hours. So I went into the allergy room, and I said, "Would you please test me? I've never been tested." So I'm sitting there, and, you know, there's music playing, and people walking back and forth. It's an active allergy testing room, okay? I got the shots on my arm, and I'm sitting there. And I feel this pressure in my head building, and I'm thinking to myself, why are they playing that stupid music? It's irritating me. Don't they know I'm getting tested? And people are walking back and forth. I'm going, this is too much. And then I realized I was having a reaction. If I hadn't been at work, I could have been on the floor kicking and screaming. And I called the man over the young man, the lab guy, and I said, help me, I need help. I'm having some kind of reaction. He looks on my arm. There's not one area that's raised. Everything was perfectly flat. I was having no physical reaction. He gives me a shot while the needle's in my arm. I go, and the tension and the anger just dissipated. And he said, listen, you know, maybe tomorrow we'll see something. Watch your arm carefully and help me out that way. We never saw anything. Now, his conclusion was that I was having these brain allergies, almost like a brain swelling, that would create this kind of irrational anger that I had experienced in different parts of my life. What do you think?
Can I?
Yes.
Add? Okay.
I'd love your help.
One of the things that's interesting, a lot of the doctors, even doing this, are underdosing the patients. In other words, this is harmonics. You can get a number 2, number 6, number 8. They all work, but the weaker they are, the less positive they, you know, you get the responses. But a lot of doctors are underdosing, where they're doing diluting it by 1 to 10 up to maybe 10 or 15. I can go almost to concentrate, and they do much better. And I learned this even from Dr. Truss. You know, I took some of his patients, and I used the concentrated as opposed to 1 in 25, and the patient cleared up almost immediately. I was going to tell a story. I'll tell you a quick story. I had a lady that came in a wheelchair. She had multiple sclerosis. She had been in the wheelchair for 4 years, and they were treating her. I put on her skin one of the fungi. She had fungus on her toenails and so on. And I put that, and I put candida on her skin. And she could move one foot a little bit. And after putting it on, she suddenly said, I can't move my feet at all. Well, we did neutralization. I put a different dose on. And as I put a certain dose, she says, you know what? I can move my foot. In fact, she lifted her leg and got up and walked 2 steps in the office.
Oh, my goodness.
We put her on treatment with this. She ended up being able to walk 2 flights of stairs and everything. She was really feeling perfect. And then one day she called me. She lived about 4 hours north of New York City. And she said, I'm back to ground zero again. Well, I spent an hour on the phone. We finally figured it out. She had turned her wood-burning fireplace on, and the mold on the wood triggering it. We took that away from her. And the only other time she got regression was when she was given an antibiotic, which has mold in it, and that caused it. But other than that, she became a normal, her MS cleared it completely.
What a beautiful story.
Thank
Absolutely.
You.
I would just love for the next hours to sit here and hear your patient's stories. I really want to thank you. I want to thank you for spending this time with us. And I also want to thank you for the work you're doing, because it's very hard. There's something wrong here in our society. They've taken our curiosity away. Or not they've taken. It's disappeared. I don't see curious doctors any longer. I see doctors who are smart, who follow directions and follow the book. But curious is very lacking, not only the medical profession, but in all professions. And in you, I see curiosity. You're looking, you're questioning, and I want to thank you for that. Carol?
I'm so glad you could spend time with us today, Dr. Teach, and share some of your experience. I think people will find a lot to inspire them by some of the things you talked about. So can you give the audience your contact information, your website, whatever you'd like to share?
My contact, I'm in Manhattan. I'm at 81st and Park. My phone number here is 212-988-1821. And my website is, I have a number of them, but it's mmteichmd, And my email is mmteachmdpc@gmail.com. And some way or other, if you need to, I do problem solving. Basically, a lot of my patients have been to many doctors, and I just look in a different place and ask different questions. That's all.
Could you again give us your phone number for those people who...
Okay, the number is 212-988-1821. What I usually will do is get on with a patient before they make an appointment and find out if they really belong here, because rather than just bring someone in and find out. But I'll spend some time on the phone with them before just to explain what I do.
Okay.
Thank you so much. This was really been fun. And thank you
for the exposure.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for listening. And we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA, CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.